Good morning. It's 9:06. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. It's All Things Political for Monday, July 25th, 2011. We'll spend the hour having a conversation about the latest political news. Nationally, of course, the debt ceiling debate is still the big news story. There's plenty of state political news as well. Joining me for All Things Political this week is Jeff Mayers, president of WISPolitics.com. Jeff, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Well, I know that our phones are going to fill up pretty quickly with callers who want to talk about the debt ceiling debate. But before that sucks all the oxygen out of the room, I want to talk about some state issues. We'll start with Wisconsin politics first.
Sure thing.
It's the summer of recalls, and one of the latest stories to pop up is that local officials are complaining about how much it costs to mail absentee ballots and the fact that they're seeing so many more requests.
Well, yes. I mean, there's a lot of turnout mechanisms occurring here. This is really, this is an unprecedented thing, 9 recall elections in a summer when most of Wisconsin takes time off from politics. So there's a lot of turnout mechanisms out there. Both sides are going to known voters and saying, we need you to vote. And so a lot of people who won't be in town or want to act right away are using the absentee ballot system.
And as I understand it, it costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.50 to send these out.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a burden on the locals. Anytime there's a special election, that's a burden on the locals. When there was a recount in the Supreme Court race, that's a burden on the locals. And so this has been, a trying summer for many local elections officials, a trying year for many local elections officials because of these extra costs.
Mm-hmm. And one of the problems that they're running into is that some of the people who are requesting absentee ballots aren't actually eligible to vote?
Well, I'm not fully aware of those problems because, again, they... there are different rules in effect now. Those were passed in the voter ID bill. There's a soft... introduction of the voter ID bill, and you have to the time in which you can be a resident has been lengthened, so that there's some confusion in that. But it's a new law, and so anytime there's a new law like that, there's bound to be some confusion. Voters going to the polls don't have to show their IDs, but they're being asked to, on election days.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll have to see how that plays out. I guess we don't get a lot of discussion about how tough this really has all been on the local officials, these recall elections, and then we had the primaries. That's a significant expense for local government, and do they just have to eat that cost, or is the state going to help them pay for it?
There is, unless there is a special appropriation in that regard, that will have to come from the local budgets.
Mm. Well, that's unfortunate. All right, let's talk about redistricting. The plan that was passed by the State Assembly is Latinos in Milwaukee County are not happy. The State Assembly map divides Chavez Drive.
Well, this is a Republican redistricting map. When Democrats have been in control sometimes, there have been Democratic redistricting maps. Redistricting is the most blatantly political action that occurs in the legislature. Most often, there are split houses of the legislature, or there's a split control. Here there's all one-party control. And so Republicans have drawn a map that's advantageous to them. And they started in Milwaukee, I think, from what we can gather. There's not much discussion about their map drawing because they're very wary of a legal challenge. And there already is a legal challenge in federal court, a a petition for, and we'll have to see whether there's traction in the federal courts on this. But the Republicans say they've been careful about minority representation, but that is probably the best way to get action in the federal courts for the Democrats here. So I think that this, the complaints of the Hispanic community could be very significant. But again, that remains to be seen. You have to get a federal court to sort of get interested in it.
Yeah, well, these things have ended up in the courts many times in the past. I've often wondered why we don't just, you know, skip the legislature and go right to the courts to begin with. But
well, there is also there are also proposals to have sort of, I guess you would call it the Iowa plan, to have a non-partisan or a bipartisan commission redraw the lines every 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to give the phone number here, because this hour it's going to be different than next hour, and for reasons that I won't go into. This hour is going to be a different phone number than the one you're used to. If you want to call in and talk about anything political, the latest political news, your take on some of the state news is a fair game. We will get to the deficit talks or non-talks, I suppose you might call them, and those national issues, maybe even some international questions as well. Here is the number to call this hour, 800-642-1234. That's toll-free, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. And there is a Kathleen Dunn Facebook show page, and you can leave a comment there, and I'll share it with the listeners. Okay. My guest is Jeff Mayers, president of wispolitics.com. Another story that's on your website this morning, there's a pretty big amount of money sitting out there that the state is owed in delinquent taxes. It's it's over $750 million. Boy, you know, we could really use that money right now.
Well, yes, going after delinquent taxes is a key part of balancing any budget. But yeah, there's a lot of this comes up every so many years, but going after these people, there's a cost to going after the people, and often there's settlement of the debts. So, but it's a significant amount, and I think that the Department of Revenue is saying that it's not able to do all that it normally has done because of the budget shortfall in going after this money. This does come up. This did come up in the budget debate about how many, in terms of funding Department of Revenue. So this is an ongoing problem with state finances.
And it's probably nothing new either.
No, it comes up periodically. But again, it takes money to go after the people, so there is a cost involved. But with that amount hanging out there, you would think it would be worth it.
Well, you would. I mean, even if you didn't collect 100% of it, which you probably won't, as you said, things are often settled. You're still ahead. I mean, you know, as long as it's not costing you more to collect it than the debt is worth, it would seem to me that the effort should be made. And it sounds like the Department of Revenue is working on it. But still, that's a pretty big number. Okay, 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org, or find the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook fan page and leave a comment. Those are the three ways to get involved. We've already got callers on the line, and we will get to those in just a moment. Just before we do that, however, I noticed that, that we're still having debates about rail projects. And any idea why Robin Voss doesn't like passenger rail? I mean, he really doesn't like it.
Well, it's a part of it is from what Representative Voss, he's the co-chair of the Assembly co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, a Republican, maybe a future speaker, and he doesn't think that his constituents want it, is what he says, and he also thinks that it's a drain on state resources over time, that that rail over time will cost more. Will cost more in subsidies, and he doesn't think that that's worth it, that that highway rehab projects, you get more bang for your buck than those in rail. And so he was one of those who supported Governor Scott Walker's denial of the or rejection of the federal funding that Governor Jim Doyle and the Democratic legislature had had pursued. So, you know, this is a real conflict amongst the parties. Democrats generally are pro-rail, pro-subsidies for rail, and Republicans are not. The exception here with Republicans is they support the Chicago to Milwaukee line, but their reasoning is that that one makes money. And so that's the one they like to support. They're very hesitant to support any new rail projects.
Okay. We have a question about redistricting from Pat in Sauk County, who emailed us. Thanks, Pat. And Pat's email says, have Democrats ever been in charge of redistricting before? If so, when were they in a when they were in a position to do that, what was the result?
Yes, from I did a little research on this, and there was a time in it was after the Democrats got control of the State House in the 1982 elections, the November 1982 elections, and at that time there was a court plan in effect for the 82 elections, but a lot of the Democrats didn't like it. And so when they were in power, they wanted to put their own plan into effect. And there was a special session in July of 1983. And they put in effect, or they passed a plan. Governor Tony Earle at the time signed it. And that came to rule elections for the rest of that decade.
Okay. These things happen over time. There have been plenty of examples of it. There were some particularly, well, let's call them interesting things about the Republican plan, particularly on the congressional level, having to do with the 7th and 3rd congressional districts. Portage County would have been, would be removed or is removed from the 7th congressional district and put in the 3rd, which is largely western Wisconsin. And some parts that used to be in the 3rd district in western Wisconsin are now in the 7th. This benefits Sean Duffy, but it's going to make that district look pretty funny on the map.
Well, yeah. Well, again, this is a you know, a very political process, and the maps are drawn for political benefits of those who draw them. And so in this case, Republicans are trying mightily to protect Sean Duffy. He's the Republican who beat, who took over the seat long held by Representative Dave Obie. And Obie decided in early 2010 that he was not going to run. And then that left an open seat. Sean Duffy had already been out there as a candidate. He ended up winning the seat in what was a very Republican year. But Republicans want to protect him because Duffy is already targeted by Democratic forces. You know, freshman Democrats freshman Republicans around the country are being challenged already by Democrats. Who have a who feel that 2012 will not be the same kind of Republican year? So they're trying to take back some of the numbers that they lost in 2010. So Duffy is definitely on the bubble there, and so this map would add several percentages under using past election results to add several Republican percentage points in his district, and it would make the third district, which is represented by a Democratic incumbent, a veteran Democratic incumbent, Ron Kind, make his district a little more Democratic.
Well, I don't know why they just didn't go all the way and move Douglas and Bayfield counties into the third district then and get it over with.
Well, part of this is every time, this is like a balloon in redistricting. Every time you move one a boundary, you affect another. And so the map drawers using computer technology decided this was the easiest way to do it.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We have a lot of people who want to get in and a lot of topics to cover, so we'll continue that conversation in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. It's All Things Political here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 23 minutes after 9 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up later on today on the Ideas Network. After 4, Ben Marins talks with Republican State Senator Alberta Darling of River Hills about her recall campaign. That's at issue with Ben Marins after 4 o'clock. And then at 4:30, Ben will be talking with Democrat Sandy Pasch of Whitefish Bay about her campaign for Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. So we'll have some candidates involved in recalls on the air this afternoon. This hour, it's All Things Political on the Kathleen Dunn program, and my guest is Jeff Mayers, president of WisPolitics.com. And Jeff, we have callers who want to join us. Let's take a call next first from Bill in Madison. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. This is concerning the voter ID bill that just got passed. I have to say I bitterly resent that bill. Of course, they asked me for my ID when I went to vote this past time to replace Joe Parisi in the 40th district, and I bitterly resented having to show that, because I think that it's a red herring. We have much more to worry about in this state from government engineered election fraud than we do from individual voters fraud. And for example, that fiasco in Waukesha County over the Supreme Court election that was held recently, where the county clerk, who has a rather checkered and questionably, she escaped prison only because she turned on a bunch of people during the prosecution of a bunch of members of the Assembly and Senate several years ago. I mean, she has a tainted past, and she pulled some shenanigans with the vote counting. I suspect that there may have been ballot box stuffing of some sort, and this dates back all the way to the 2000 election with George W. Bush in Florida. I mean, I think that election fraud is becoming a serious problem in this country and in general, and in Wisconsin in particular. And I wonder what can be done to hold election, the election boards to account, rather than spending all this time and money worrying about what voters are doing.
Well, this goes to much of the debate surrounding the so-called voter ID bill or the photo ID bill. This has been a Republican agenda item for many years, and it was blocked by Democrats. Here you have an all-Republican state house, and it passed. And it also it's being implemented now, and there is a there's a cost to implement that. The state is providing money to help implement that. But your point about fraud, in the American system, I mean, in some ways the election system is the soft underbelly of the democracy. It's locally administered and locally enforced in many ways. So in fraud, in many cases, is detected and enforced by the local prosecutors and local judges. So these things, there is a state impact and a state influence, but a lot of this has to do with local administration. And so a widespread fraud in the state, widespread, I don't think there's been evidence of that, but there has been some pockets of fraud that has been discovered and prosecuted. I don't have the exact numbers on the tip of my tongue. But it, again, I think that, you know, the debate is in many ways still out about the overall effect of the photo ID bill. From the Republican point of view, you know, Democrats say this is going to shut out seniors, going to shut out underprivileged folks who don't drive. That means that they have to go get a photo ID, which is available for free at a state identification card, in essence, from the DOT. And then you have Republicans saying, well, you know, everybody, you have to show a photo ID for all sorts of things. You know, why not voting? So I think this tends to poll well. You ask people in polls, it tends to poll well. Should you show your photo ID when you vote? And so it's again, I think the real effects are you know, remain to be seen. But there are certainly pockets where people are resisting it and don't like it. And I think that the there were some. Definitely in the 48th, which is a special election in the Madison area, that viewpoint was expressed quite frequently.
Well, it occurs to me. Someone who I was talking about this with the other day suggested that for the Democrats, they'd better spend less time complaining and more time making sure that all of their supporters have ID cards.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, especially in these special Senate elections, it's all about getting your voters to the polls. And so you don't need photo IDs, you know, in these Senate elections. But, you know, in the future, they'll have to have photo IDs unless, you know, they'll have to have for the 2012 elections, you know, people have to have photo IDs. And so that's the landscape that Democrats will have to contend with.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Bill. Let's go next to Glenn in Cedarburg. Glenn, good morning.
Good morning. Just to follow up on the comments about the photo ID bill, why? I have two comments. One's about the debt ceiling also. Why, if this isn't law until November, are some voting districts asking people for ID? You know, people have a right to refuse and go ahead and vote, but that seems a little ambiguous to me to enforce a law that's not law yet. And the other question is, or the other comment would be about the debt ceiling. There are many constitutional scholars that think that the president under the 14th Amendment, I believe it is, has a right under the full faith and credit to simply raise it himself if we can't work this out. I'd like to hear your speaker's comments on that. I will add, too, that Van Hollen's office, the Department of Justice of Wisconsin, in the last few elections did a study about voter fraud in Wisconsin, and they came up with a whopping 20 cases. I'll go ahead and let you comment.
All right, thanks, Glenn. Let's take the first point first. If the voter ID law isn't really in effect yet, why are people being asked for ID at the polls?
It was decided by officials that this was a way to do the soft rollout that was dictated in the legislation, that the way it would be done would be to ask people to get them in the habit, if you will, that they'll have to have one. But at the same time, telling them that, you know, for this particular election, they don't have to have one. Yeah, I can see, again, this is locally administered. I think that there could be, and it's a new thing. So there's apt to be some confusion out there. But in these Senate recall elections this summer, you don't have to show your ID. So the second point being, Does the president have the authority under the Constitution to simply raise the debt ceiling and ignore Congress and just do it? Well, yeah, there's a line of experts that have raised this possibility, raised this line of thinking, since there's been this inability of the political forces to come to agreement on this so far. But the president here doesn't seem to be taking that tack. He seems to be taking the tack now that it's up to Congress to do it, that he was involved with discussions, that in his viewpoint, Speaker Boehner walked away from these discussions. Now it's up to Congress to figure it out, he wouldn't just unilaterally do it, even though the Constitution seems to speak to that. It may yet come to that. I think that if I'm reading these discussions, it's a political problem, not a constitutional problem, and there's hope that there will be a political solution in advance of the deadline.
There was a story on Politico that says it was about how Grover Norquist seems to have he's making what he calls a clarification on the taxpayer protection pledge. This is a pledge a lot of Republican legislators or congressmen took to never raise taxes, and he has Grover Norquist appears to be saying, well, look, not maintaining the Bush tax cuts wouldn't necessarily be a tax increase. Is that going to give the Republicans enough cover to consider the revenue enhancements that President Obama wants in this debt ceiling deal, do you think?
Well, the Grover Norquist influence has been big in terms of the tax pledge issue. He is just one of, I think, several forces here working. I think a lot of this, in its analysis, is there are a lot of new, very conservative people in the Congress, including Ron Johnson, a U.S. Senator, the new U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, including Reid Ribble, the new congressman for the 8th Congressional District in northeastern Wisconsin. And so this debt ceiling issue in past years, which has been a formality, has become a way for conservatives to force spending cuts that they've been seeking a long time, and they've, in the broad view, they seem to have gained a lot of concessions from the White House on the types and the breadth of proposed spending cuts. So it's been said, and I don't have the particular hard analysis on this, it's been said, though, that the Bush tax cuts, if they had not been approved, extended, that would have in some ways taken care of this issue. But I think it would be very difficult for these conservatives in the environment they got elected to then turn around and say that the Bush tax cuts would be negated. So I think things right now seem to be headed toward a short-term fix, leave the heavy lifting to the budget bills. Again, this is it's a pretty fluid situation, but we're really getting the crunch time now. Markets are starting to react, and so I think that this is that will be the thing that will force a solution more than anything else, is the reaction of the markets.
Well, do you think so? Because I'm getting the impression that there are a lot of people who just don't really care if we drive the car over the cliff or not.
Well, again, I think that the pressure from the markets, the pressure, the pressure of what will happen if the debt ceiling isn't raised. Well, this is what, in the deeper analysis, many of the Washington insiders say what Speaker Boehner faces is he's the one who is in the careful balancing act here. He has a Lieutenant Eric Cantor, who is probably more conservative than he is, according to this analysis, and Cantor representing a lot of the freshman Republicans who are very conservative and who want to use this issue sort of in a brinksmanship sort of way. And so, the Boehner, he doesn't want to be, on the watch when Republicans are blamed, for widespread market calamity. So,
well, Rince Priebus seems to think that
I think the pressure of the markets will, come due here in the next couple of days. I'm not saying that is going to solve the problem. I'm saying that this could lead to this short-term solution.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, taking care of the short-term problem and then leaving a lot of the heavy lifting till later.
There's a lot of stuff that's been conflated here, though, because you got all sorts of things being pushed against this debt ceiling bill, and that really don't have anything to do with it. The debt ceiling is about paying for things that have already been appropriated. I mean, the money has already been – the Congress has already voted to approve the spending that's part of the debt ceiling. It's not about new spending at all. And so – that's one of the reasons this has always been a clean bill, and you just do it. I mean, it's part of the normal business of the Congress to do this, but all of a sudden it's become something else, and you have some people in Congress who would welcome that kind of the kind of chaos that some people are predicting would happen if the United States did default on its obligations. And you have the chairman of the Republican Party, Rince Priebus, saying that Obama would get blamed if that indeed is the case.
I think a lot of what you say is true. It has been a mere formality in the past. Conservative Republicans have used this as a way to get to a bigger agenda item they've had for years.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, we're in the presidential election cycle. There's yes, politics is involved, and the blame game or the potential blame game is already afoot. But I think the specter of market calamity is weighing heavily on the parties. And so we'll see they react accordingly.
The caption to this picture might well be "Nero fiddles while Rome burns."
Well, for those of us who have investments, we hope not.
Well, for those of us who hope to retire someday, this is a big deal.
So,
there's a lot of people who are going to be really seriously injured here. This isn't, one of the things that kind of bothers.
You have had, okay, not all Republicans are saying this. And I mean, the Speaker has said, the Speaker Boehner has said many times, it's going to happen. You have, conservative Republicans in the U.S. Senate who are saying, it should happen and it will happen. So, I'm not predicting the future. I think it is, and this is an extraordinary debate at an extraordinary time. We are in a presidential election cycle, so, it affects presidential politics, too, which is why Obama is doing some of the things that he's doing. So, I think that the markets have not been reacting negatively to this because there appeared to be a solution. Now, because talks broke down, then there's a bad market reaction feared. If the markets react in a really negative way, I think that will have that will provide impetus for at least a short-term solution. I think most policymakers think that this is something that needs to be avoided. But, again, mm-hmm. politics often gets in the way of things like
that. Yeah. It's an awful lot of chest thumping going on, both parties. Rather unfortunate. Here's the number to use this hour, and I apologize for the fact that we are going to have two different numbers this morning. You don't need to see the sausage being made. Trust me on that. These things happen once in a while. 800-642-1220. 1234 is the number to call this hour for the Kathleen Dunn program, and next hour we'll be back to our usual number, 800-642-1234. Email, that doesn't change, talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org, and I've got an email that I want to get to here as well after the break here. You can also go to Facebook, look for the Kathleen Dunn Show page, and leave a comment there. Again, 800-642-1234. It's All Things Political for July 25th, 2011. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 9:43, you're listening to All Things Political on the Kathleen Dunn program here on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Here's what's coming up later on the Ideas Network. After 3 on Here on Earth, Gene Faraca talks with former NPR correspondent Sarah Chase about the connections between the current events in Afghanistan and the Arab Spring. That's coming up after 3 here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. We're talking about political news and plenty of it to talk about. We've been talking a little bit about the whole debt ceiling thing. I'm really surprised. Last week, that was pretty much every single call we got was about the debt ceiling, and so far today, only one. Not quite sure what that is. Let's talk to Jim in Milwaukee because I think he has a really interesting comment to make. Jim, good morning.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just suggest that one of the ways, it's very important if people want to keep in touch with the world to read as widely as possible, and I just want to suggest a couple alternative ways. One is the Chicago Sun-Times has all sorts of interesting articles that come on every day. Today, for example, they have an article about the gentleman from Norway who did the slaughter over there and was apparently going to try to incite some violence to counter the Muslim influence in Europe. And also, the August 1st through the 7th, Nation magazine has some great articles, one on rendition in Somalia, undertaken by the CIA under Obama, and two articles that relate to the injury of children, an article about how Bill Clinton's foundation was involved with some trailers in Haiti that the formaldehyde causes cancer and also causes problems with asthma. And there was also an interesting article on El Salvador where under CAFTA, in the agreements with governments, if governments take measures that cut corporate profits, they can undertake action against individual nations to bring them in line. And the cyanide that is being used in gold mining in El Salvador is threatening people's health and safety there, and also the death squads are operating to try to kill people that organize resistance to this. So there are a lot of good articles out there in various sources that people can read that give them much more information than they would get by just reading their hometown newspaper alone.
All right, Jim, thanks. Thanks for that call. Jeff Mayers, you want to comment on that? You know, there are a lot of news aggregators out there. You can actually, it's not that hard to get a diverse source of get diverse sources of information. It's out there, but you do have to be willing to look for it.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, this is one of the things that WISPolitics.com and WISBusiness.com have sought to do for 10 years, and that's provide one-stop shopping for people, you know, on the Internet about Wisconsin politics. And then we have subscriber services for those who are intensely interested in those. And we're operating, you know, from a, you know, a broad political base here. We're not Democrat operating on the liberal spectrum or the conservative spectrum. We're operating, you know, we have articles from across the spectrum at WISPolitics.com, WISBusiness.com, and WISOpinion.com. WISOpinion is where we have our opinion pieces. So, but, you know, one of the things that the web allows people to do is to get articles and opinions for the things that just they believe in, for the philosophy they adhere to. You know, so you can pick and choose sort of as you wish. You can customize your news flow, you know, as you wish. You know, our operating principle happens to be, well, we try to be one-stop shop for people interested about politics and government in Wisconsin. And so that's what we attempt to do. But there's many, many sites adhering to many, many philosophies on the Internet, and you can customize it yourself in many ways. You know, the rap against newspapers, though, I'm not anti-newspaper. Much of the information on the web still flows from the staff of mainstream media, be it TV TV radio or newspapers. They're the people who still have, even despite recent cuts, still have the majority of news staffs out there. News websites like ours have relatively small staffs compared to existing media institutions.
I can say that aggregators like WisPolitics.com are a real blessing for talk show hosts.
Well, maybe that's our real purpose.
I don't think so, but it's nice of you to say. Let's go back to the phones, and we'll hear from Barbara in Edgerton next. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I love your program. I listen practically all day. My name is Barbara, and I'm a naturalized citizen. And I'm listening to this debate about the debt ceiling, and it just frustrates me. And I think what they should do is cut all the senators and committeemen, everyone in Washington, their salary, their pension, their benefits, and we'll see how fast this will be done. And no back pay. Just cut it. We have no money. Just do it. And we'll see how fast they will start voting on what they should be voting instead of concentrating on their jobs.
All right, thanks, Barbara.
All they're doing there is protecting their jobs. They're not doing anything. They're just protecting their jobs.
All right. Jeff, what do you think? That's been suggested by a number of people, I think. Don't pay them until they perform.
Well, okay. I mean, I think that Barb and Edgerton is expressing a frustration that many have. This is, I think, the frustration you saw with the Minnesota government shutdown. It's hey, we elected all you folks to do your job, and now you're not doing them. So why should you get paid? I think that's a lot of people in the middle, a lot of independents, independent-minded voters. You know, think that way. They want their government to work. They're not so concerned about the politics, the partisan politics of it all. They want their government to work. And of course, they have their own view about what it means to have it work. But when things shut down and certain benefits are denied, or certain places that aren't open, or they can't get the permit that they need, those things get in the way of especially if you're a small business or you're retiree on a fixed income. So I think that this feeds into the general cynicism about politics. It's generally bad for incumbents. So these kind of things, are not good for incumbent politicians. I think this explains in part, Obama's, recent poor ratings. The president or any chief executive tends to get blamed for things when things go wrong. The economy is still sputtering. There's this debate that doesn't seem to be fixed. A lot of that just weighs on ratings of incumbent politicians. Both the ratings of the president and Congress, falter because people are frustrated.
Let's see. Let's go to Elizabeth and Hayward next. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. I don't even know where to begin on this.
Neither do I.
I'm not sure that your speaker, the fellow from WISNET, is listening to the questions that are being asked, because his answers are sort of all over the place. As far as the debt ceiling goes and partisan politics and what have you, I think that, number one, when... I think it was you who said a few minutes ago that there's all this posturing and chest thumping going on both sides. I understand your need to want to report in a balanced way, but that's not balanced because there isn't chest thumping going on both sides. I think that the Democratic Party has put several proposals on the table, and it is the Republican Party and John Boehner being unable to make his people work together that's keeping us from having this debt ceiling increase. The whole idea that the Republicans are saying, okay, we have compromised. We have said that we will let you raise the debt ceiling in exchange for taking Medicare away is not a compromise. I don't see how that can possibly be seen by anyone as a compromise.
Okay, Elizabeth, thanks for the call. Jeff, you want to respond to that?
Well, I mean, I'm not covering that directly. I'm not sourcing that directly. I'm not talking directly to the politicians involved in the debt ceiling debate. So, I mean, we cover state government and politics. But what I'm reading, I think I hope I expressed this before. Maybe I didn't say it clearly. I said that obviously Speaker Boehner has a balancing act. If you read these reports closely, he's trying to contend with what he thinks is the thing to do about getting a debt ceiling and balancing the politics within his own caucus, which has turned really conservative after the 2010 elections. So, this is what leaders do. They often have to sort of balance the needs of their caucus and an upcoming election with this. Politics are involved in this, and, I hear frustration with the caller about that, and I think that again, people are frustrated that there isn't a way to get a solution. Now the White House contends that Boehner walked away. Boehner says that negotiating with the White House is like trying to keep a bowl of Jell-O still, or something to that effect. That it's a moving target. We're not inside the room. I can't say who's right or who's wrong. I think the larger question is, how's it going to get done so that there's not fiscal calamity?
This I want to, before we run out of time here, and we're getting close to that. Never mind. We're going to skip that. Let's go to Reed in Clintonville.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have two issues. I'll get to them very quickly here. First one, last Friday, our son received in the mail a notice from the state of Wisconsin saying that his unemployment, and he's actively seeking employment and has been since he was laid off in January of this year, his unemployment will be terminated. He was due to begin the extension aspect of the unemployment. Then on Saturday, he found a check and a notice in his mailbox saying that has been rescinded. I suspect that Republicans in both the Assembly and the Senate have seen the handwriting on the wall. That said, I would like to address the issue quickly of collective bargaining. As a former teacher and proud of my profession, among others, teachers are taking an enormous hit by being denied collective bargaining. They have been aggressive workers doing their job daily in the light or in the face of many roadblocks. And now to have collective bargaining denied to them is a great disservice to the profession. However, the Green Bay Packers, among others, are currently in collective bargaining talks. I suspect that our governor is not willing to address the issue of collective bargaining when it comes to massive salaries that will be paid out due to collective bargaining in the sports world. And I'll hang up and take any answer or comment off the air. Thank you very much.
Well, if there's one thing that's bigger than state government, everything put together, it's the Green Bay Packers in the NFL. So
there you go.
Okay, there's nothing that Scott Walker or the state government could do about that. That is really a larger force in the United States.
They don't.
And on the unemployment thing, there's politics involved in that too. Just for background for people, there's the state legislature had before it last week. 13-week extension for unemployment benefits for thousands of Wisconsinites. It got hung up over a one-week delay that Republicans wanted. They want to have a one-week delay, which would save the trust fund tens of millions of dollars. The trust fund is highly indebted at this point. A Democrat said, well, you know, that's not helping these unemployed. Every check counts, every delay counts. And this got hung up in the legislature. They never passed the bill. You have the, both houses have to agree on the bill and send it to the governor. The bill's hung up. It may not be settled till September. So that's the situation with that. Collective bargaining.
Okay.
I mean, this is... I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have to go because we're out of time.
Okay.
We'll do this again. Jeff Myers, thank you very much. President of WISPolitics.com on all things political. Rhonda Fanning produced this hour of programming, and Cynthia Schuster handled on-air production. Thanks also to Dave Potras. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. I'll be back with another hour. We're going to talk about Hunter S. Thompson next hour. It's the Ideas Network of WPR.